This is The Urban Connection, the weekly show on issues that affect the community.
The incarceration rate of the United States of America is the highest in the world. And according to one study, one-third of black men in their 20s are either on parole, on probation, or in prison. On this edition of The Urban Connection, we'll talk to a prison professional who will give you an inside view of America's prison system.
The Bureau of Prisons has been suffering for a number of years with the staffing problem. And if anyone tries to say staffing don't contribute to the overall problems in the Bureau of Prisons, they actually should be taking some medicine.
I'm Leonard Birdsong. The Urban Connection starts right after this.
Now, The Urban Connection continues. Once again, here's Leonard Birdsong.
This is Leonard Birdsong on The Urban Connection. All of you have heard of the apparent suicide of Jeffrey Epstein in Manhattan. The apparent suicide, we don't know much more about it, but his death has put a spotlight on issues inside the Bureau of Prisons. Our guest today knows a lot about Bureau of Prisons. Most people don't. He is Eric Young. He has been the president. His term just ended. He was the president of the American Federation of Government Employees Council of Prison Locals, which represented more than 33,000 U.S. Bureau of Prison employees nationwide. Since 1990, the federal inmate population more than tripled over the course of two decades, but staffing levels did not keep pace. Eric, thank you so much for coming on The Urban Connection. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Leonard.
Can you first of all tell us, how did you get involved with corrections? I know you lived in the Miami area. Tell us about it.
Well, actually, coincidence. I came home after the first Persian Gulf War. I was actually service-connected out of the military. Came home 1993. You know, it was very scarce of employment and jobs, and I had gotten out of something that I really didn't want. As I indicated, I was medically discharged from there, but I wanted to be back a part of a team atmosphere like the military, and the Bureau of Prisons was hiring. And I actually got employed, luckily, because of my service-connected disability.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what prison were you stationed at in the beginning?
It is the Federal Detention Center of Miami, FDC Miami, right down in the downtown area.
There have been a lot of speculation about Mr. Epstein's suicide. Do you think it has anything to do with the staffing problems the Bureau of Prisons have been having?
I think the Bureau of Prisons have been suffering for a number of years with the staffing problem. And if anyone tries to say staffing don't contribute to the overall problems in the Bureau of Prisons, they actually should be taking some medicine. Staffing is the number one key for us to be able to fulfill our mission statement, and that is to operate safe and humane facilities across America. Staffing is the number one key to all problems that arise in the Bureau of Prisons.
So how many prisons are in our system?
We have 122 in all, and they range from low security all the way to the Supermax in Florence, Colorado.
Right, right. That's the one where most of it is underground?
That's correct. We have, of the 200 inmates that are there, actually we have probably about 70% of them have murdered inside our prison, some more than once, and also out in the community, some more than once. So, yeah, it's a pretty significant population there.
The bad of the bad. Well, can you tell us what is the percentage of African Americans who are in the prisons? Can you tell me that?
Well, I could just tell you predominantly the prison population is based on the demographics are predominantly black and brown people.
Mm.
I want to say at least more than half, two-thirds of the inmate population
are people of color.
Yes, people of color.
Yeah. I was a law professor and used to teach criminal law back in the early 2000s, and I know at that time that was probably two-thirds people of color in the Bureau of Prisons. But it seems to be the same, but there have been people we've been letting out. Wasn't there some kind of elimination of offenders, rehabilitation people let out? They call it justice reform, criminal justice reform.
Criminal justice reform, that's correct. And actually, when I actually got elected in 2013. That was one of my first key initiatives, was some of the policies I was trying to push was sentencing reform, meaningful criminal justice reform. I actually endorsed Dick Durbin sentencing reform that introduced a safety valve back to judges, to return discretion back to judges versus leaving it to U.S. attorneys when the over-prosecution was, which has caused a significant problem in the Bureau to have our population increase almost up to 220,000 back many years ago. Actually, right when I got elected, that's what our population was. And since I've actually participated in that effort with the Justice Department, working with Eric Holder, Sally Yates, Deputy Attorney General and Attorney General, we have seen a significant decrease in the inmate population in my last 6 years. So we've released approximately about 40,000 inmates to date.
That's great. And I hope that they can find jobs when they can get out. Are there programs to help them after they get out?
Absolutely. And that is something else that I've been pushing as well, which is in the Congress, is to make sure that we're properly funding our prisons. You know, often you have people trying to run prisons on a cheap with blank dollar amount. And if we don't actually get it right, you actually have people coming back to your community for a brief period of time, and they turn around and come back. So programming is all what the Bureau of Prisons has been mostly focused on in my last tenure, the last 6 years predominantly.
Well, you know, I know a lot about immigration, too. I've taught immigration law at the law school, and I know that there are a lot of private prisons right now, and a lot of aliens are being held there, people who are trying to get asylum in the United States. What do you think about private prisons?
As
a matter of fact, they're for-profit entities generally.
That's correct. And I truly have been advocating against the for-profit prison model during Barack Obama's administration. Sally Yates actually moved toward the elimination of private prisons in the Bureau of Prisons. And shortly after the election, that policy was reversed by the Trump administration. Jeff Sessions, within only a couple weeks of being in office, rescinded that policy. And even though we've reduced the inmate population by 40,000, we still have remaining in the custody, control, and care of the private prisons about 20-plus thousand inmates that we could easily subsume back into the Bureau of Prisons population. We have empty housing units, practically some empty facilities, and we could actually take those inmates back into our care, but for the policies of this administration. To basically line the pockets of the for-profit entities. Some of these individual companies are actually holding their events at Trump property as we speak.
That I didn't know. That's a shame. Let me just go on to something else. In your opinion, you believe that what do you believe is the most existential threat facing the Bureau of Prisons today?
I think the most existential threat facing the Bureau of Prisons is people who don't know anything about corrections, literally trying to dictate and tell us how to run prisons. We've been doing it almost for 90 years successfully. Even with the underfunding, short staffing, we're still one of the premier law enforcement correctional entities in the world. But to run it the way that individuals who've never ever dealt with corrections the way that they've done it in the past few years is the reason why we have a Jeffrey Epstein debacle.
It was a debacle, too.
Absolutely. And I truly believe that if we it's a difference when an administration wants to come in and implement policies, but you still need the correctional professionals to still tell you how to carry out those policies without jeopardizing the safety and security of the facility and also the staff and the inmates who are responsible for their custody and control and care. You know, if we don't do that, we actually run a mock of literally rebuking our mission statement, which is to provide safe and secure facilities for inmates to be rehabilitated to go back into society.
It's my understanding that you guys have been having trouble finding correctional officers. There seem to never be enough. Is that right?
That's correct. And you have to remember, we have 122 facilities all across America. The predominantly, the great majority of our facilities are in rural areas, very remote locations. So staff have to drive great distances just to get to work. So it's not like we are actually we're having a waiting list of people coming in. And the old antiquated pay structure of the Bureau of Prisons of the correctional officers is very low. They're on the bottom of the GS pay scale, starting out at GS 5, 6, 7. Officers have to compete for 8. So oftentimes you have many people who are literally getting up to their mandatory retirement age and can't even get promoted to a GS 8, which is, you know, not even a dignified retirement. And if you understand what I mean, because we have a maximum retirement age of age 57. So a lot of people leave due to frustration the moment you make them upset or whatever. You know, they see that they have no upward mobility path. They've actually run aground of the age where they've, you know, have gotten a cutoff and literally a stalemate. So that's how we lose a lot of staff. 5,800 right now currently eligible to retire before the end of this year. With a 4,000 deficit, that could only get worse.
Eric, we need to take a quick break. Stick around. We'll be back for more with Eric Young as we discuss the state of our nation's prisons here on the Urban Connection.
More of the Urban Connection straight ahead. Stay tuned. Now back to the Urban Connection. Here's your host, Leonard Birdsong.
We're back with Eric Young. He is a former president of the American Federation of Government Employees Union, which represents prison employees, among others. And we're getting an insider's perspective on the nation's prison system. Eric, can you give us an idea of the ratio of prison officers to the inmates they oversee?
Well, we have 10 to 1, actually, a 10 to 1 inmate to correction officer ratio. Back in the 80s, early 90s, that was down significantly to around 4 to 1. So if you could understand how the population have, you know, literally almost quadrupled, but tripled over the last 30 years, it has left us in a significant deficit where we're still playing catch up.
Yeah.
When I first came in as the officer, when I first came in as the national president, our high security penitentiaries were 53% over their rated capacity.
So
system wide, we were 36% over rated capacity. We didn't even have places to put inmates safely and securely. We were emptying out television rooms to literally make them into sleeping quarters for inmates. We were holding them in holding cells. It was almost like a revolving door.
Right.
We just didn't have enough place to put them or couldn't build a prison fast enough. I mean, it was just that bad. And so right now we are headed the way.
Well, can you, I mean, I understand what you're saying. Can you tell us more about this correctional center in Manhattan? I think it's called the MCC. Do you know anything about the staffing levels there? I've been reading about the fact that they've had problems.
Well, they have more than problems. I first became aware of the staffing problems during the government shutdown, the longest government shutdown in history, where many of our staff couldn't even afford to even commute to and from home because they were already traveling, commuting great distances. They were required under our contract to have 7.5 hours in between shifts. So they were working regularly 16 hours a day. I found out that they were over 40 officers short during the government shutdown early in the year. So that problem never corrected itself, and the Bureau of Prisons administrators literally started what we call temporary dutying staff there from neighboring facilities to assist with the mission. But the moment that we got out of the news of the government shutdown, they actually stopped that. So you actually went back to the deficit of the officers being regularly mandatory to work overtime, the use of secretaries, cooks, teachers to fill behind missing correction officers, what we call a process of augmenting staff to perform the duties of the security duties of correctional officers.
So can you give us an idea, because most people don't understand, What do correctional officers do? I mean, the sort of rank and file, as you might say. What do they do during their term, their work day? What's it like?
A correctional officer is almost like a cop in a community. You have one correctional officer working each shift on a regular housing unit that could actually be supervising hundreds of inmates at a time. Typically, on average, we have at a medium security facility one correctional officer per 130 inmates.
Wow.
So that person is literally dealing day-to-day interacting with those individuals, those offenders that they have in their custody, control, and care. They're actually face-to-face with those individuals, coming in personal contact with these individuals. You know, a lot of people have an analogy of what prisons may look like, but from the days of Bonanza, but that is not the way that prisons are today, the modern-day prisons are today. Inmates are walking about you. And so you're having constant interactions with them, and you're actually teaching inmates work ethic. You know, you're basically telling them when to get up in the morning, when they're going to eat, when they're going to shower, you know, to teaching them some form of routine, you know, some things that people had never been taught before, believe it or not, a dignity of work, making them get up to go to work every day, to perform chores and things that they ordinarily wouldn't be doing. So it's a very tedious job with an 8-hour shift. You know, they are required to do minimum shakedowns, pat searching inmates, strip searching inmates coming in and out, making sure criminal activity is not going on, keeping the prison safe. So when you don't have a correction officer on duty that is getting to know the inmate population day to day and to have someone come in to feel behind them, you break routine. And when you break routine, you could literally cause a riot, a disturbance as a result of, you know, that not being consistent.
Yeah.
So and that is what the MCC facility was actually doing. It was actually filling one of the key critical roles up there via overtime. That means that was not consistent work and practice of someone getting to know the inmate population up in the special housing unit. That is one of our most secured facilities. And to have that position up there being filled by people via mandatory overtime or voluntary overtime on a regular and routine basis is the cause of the Jeffrey Epstein situation.
I see. Well, tell me this. I understand, and I didn't know this, that many of the prisons now have problems with contraband and cell phones. I didn't know about that. People are actually smuggling cell phones into Bureau of Prisons?
Yes, and, you know, again, goes back to staffing. Your staffing is not out where they need to be, which is we have gun towers all at many of our facilities, a maximum security prison. If those gun towers are not actually manned, now you got staff introducing contraband by throwing footballs over the fencing line or basketballs. And inside those footballs, whatever, you find drugs, narcotics.
Gosh.
You find cell phones, ingenious ways. Inmates have what we call 24 hours to think about how to basically get over in a prison. And if you're not actually having the proper staffing, they will use ingenious methods to actually introduce contraband in our facilities. They even have people that are flying drones over our facility and, you know, that are dropping contraband into the recreation yards where they are actually are gathered about. So it is a significant problem. When you don't have staffing, it is literally a snowball effect. Things get worse inside the facility.
So what do you want Congress to do about it?
I want them to just properly fund our prisons. I want them to regularly hold hearings to, you know, on oversight of our facilities. Because if they're not actually paying attention, now you have bureaucrats from the department in the administration that are regularly dictating how to run prisons, and they literally don't know what they're doing and don't know what they are capable of causing. So if you don't have regular oversight and they're not properly funding our facilities, you have what we have today. A major problem that the Bureau of Prisons is even facing today is the dilapidation of many of our facilities. Some of our facilities are 100 years old, and the annual budget that they give for building and funding literally could be used at one facility, you know.
Yeah.
So, and now we got to split that up between 122 facilities. That is another significant problem that we're having.
Well, do you think that after this era of mass incarceration of black folks, do you think maybe the population will start going down and maybe you be able to get the money to run the facilities the right way?
Well, the First Step Act, they was trying to implement it without the funding. And I'd actually had to lobby different legislators who was pushing that legislation to add the $75 million on the bill. Otherwise, what they do is implement policies and pass bills and increase more responsibility on the staff to get things done without the funding. So even with a decrease in population, we're still underfunded. And as I indicated before, we're going to continue to make sure that Bureau of Prisons is the premier law enforcement correctional entity in America and the world. We have to properly fund these prisons.
All right.
I truly state this regularly, that legislators, you know, they don't want to be considered weak on crime. So, but they continually introduce legislation that put responsibility on the employees of the Bureau of Prisons.
Right.
And if they're going to do that, then they actually have a responsibility to appropriately fund our prisons, because lives hang in a balance of those decisions.
Well spoken, Eric. God bless you. I want you to keep up the good fight, okay?
Oh, thank you.
It's wonderful to have had a chance to speak to you about this, because many people in our community don't know what's happening with the Bureau of Prisons or what happens in prisons. And you've shined a light on it. So thank you so much for coming on here.
Well, I appreciate it so much.
My hope is that many black and brown people will be let out of prison.
Well, I'm trying to work on it, make sure that they're not coming to prison. I think we need to focus more on the prevention part of it as well. I would hate to see that the only time a person could get a diploma is after they've been convicted of a crime, and we can't give that to everyday Americans who are standing in need of those things.
All right. We've been talking with Eric Young. He is a former president of the American Federation of Government Employees Union. Thanks again for joining us today, and we hope you will be here next week for more of the Urban Connection.
That wraps up this episode of The Urban Connection with your host, Leonard Birdsong, a production of Syndication Networks of Chicago. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of The Urban Connection.